When I picture the house, I see it in the late afternoon, the golden river light filling the windows and gilding the 200-year-old brick. That's how we came upon it, Jess and I, at the end of a long day looking at houses we couldn't afford. "It's the color of old money," Jess said, his voice full of longing. He was standing in the weed-choked driveway, his fingers twined through the ornate loops of the rusted iron gate.
"But I think it's a little over our price bracket."
I could hear the invisible quotes around the phrase, one the realtor had used half a dozen times that day. Jess was always a wicked mimic, and Katrine Vanderburg, with her faux country quilted jacket and English rubber boots and bright yellow Suburban, was an easy target.
"All she needs is a hunting rifle to look like she strode out of Downton Abbey,"
he'd whispered in my ear when she'd come out of the realty office to greet us. You'd have to know Jess as well as I did to know it was himself he was mocking, for dreaming of a mansion when it was clear we could hardly afford a hovel. It had seemed like a good idea. Go someplace new, start over, sell the already second mortgaged Brooklyn loft, pay back the maxed out credit cards, and buy something cheap in the country while Jess finished his book. By country, Jess meant the Hudson Valley, where we had both gone to college and where he had begun his first novel. He'd developed the superstition over the last winter that if he returned to the site where the muses had first spoken to him, he would finally be able to write his long-awaited second novel. And how much could houses up there cost? We both remembered the area as rustic. Jess, because he'd seen it through the eyes of a Long Island kid, and me because I'd grown up in the nearby village of Concord and couldn't wait to get out and live in the city. Since we'd graduated, though, 9/11 had happened and property values in exurbia had soared. The rustic farmhouses and shabby chic Victorian cottages we'd looked at today cost more than we'd get for the sale of our Brooklyn loft. And Jess had immediately rejected the more affordable split levels and 60s suburban ranches Katrine showed us. "They remind me of my dismal childhood," he said, staring woefully at the avocado linoleum of a Red Hook faux colonial.
"There's one more place I think you should see,"
Katrine had said after Jess refused to get out of the car at a modular home. She'd turned the Suburban off Route 9G toward River Road. For a second, I thought she was driving us toward the college, and I tensed in the back seat. Jess might want to live in the area where we had gone to school, but he didn't want to see those young, hopeful college students loping across the shaded paths of Bailey College. At least not until he'd finished the second novel and he was invited back to do a reading. But Katrine turned south, away from the college, and I heard Jess in the front seat sigh as we entered the curving tree-lined road. This was what I knew he had in mind when he talked about moving to the country. Dry-laid stone walls covered with moss, ancient sycamores with bark peeling off like old wallpaper, apple orchards, clabbered Victorian farmhouses, and through the gaps in the trees, glimpses of stately mansions and the blue ridges of the Catskills beyond the river. The road itself was filled with the light of a Hudson River school painting. I could see it reflected in Jess's face, replacing the sallow cast it had taken on this winter as he'd labored over his long unfinished work. Or the unborn monster, as he'd christened it. If only there were something we could afford on this road. But even the dreary farmhouse I'd grown up in was surely out of our price range. When we pulled into a weed-choked driveway and parked outside a rusted gate, though, I immediately recognized where we were and thought Katrine had misunderstood our situation. Lots of people did. Jess was, after all, a famous writer. The first book had done well enough, and he'd been young and photogenic enough to get his picture in Granta and Vanity Fair. He'd gotten a high six-figure advance for the second novel. But that was 10 years ago. The advance was long gone. The second novel was still incomplete. But Jess had already gotten out, drawn by that golden river light, and gone to stand at the iron gate to gaze up at the house. Silhouetted against the afternoon light, so thin and wiry in his black jeans and leather jacket, he looked like part of the iron scroll work. How thin he's grown this winter, I thought.